The ruling party in Angola is set to remain in power following widely contested elections. The People's Movement for the Liberation of Angola has governed for nearly five decades, but the opposition disputes these results. Could that lead to renewed turmoil in the African country? This is Inside Story. Hello and welcome to the program. I'm Kim Vanell. Angola's Election Commission said on Thursday the ruling party MPLA had a strong lead over the opposition. The opposition, UNITA, had hoped to capitalise on young people's frustrations over poverty. The election is Angola's fourth since the end of its civil war in 2002. The MPLA has ruled Angola for nearly five decades, most of it under President José Eduardo dos Santos, who was in power from 1979 until 2017. The opposition had pinned its hopes on mobilising young people frustrated about high unemployment and a lack of basic public services in a country with great oil wealth. Well, let's take a look at some of the key moments of Angola's recent history. The country gained independence in 1975. That marked the end of Portugal's colonial conquest of Angola that took place over nearly 400 years, but also the start of civil war between the MPLA and opposition movement UNITA. Former President José Eduardo dos Santos became president in 1979. He attempted to improve relations with the West, especially the United States, that didn't recognize the MPLA-led government. In 2002, the 25 years of intermittent conflict came to an end. The last election was held in 2017, when incumbent President João Lourenço succeeded José Eduardo dos Santos. Let's bring in our guests. José Gama joins us from Pretoria. He is a member of the MUDE Civic movement, an organisation that works for fair and transparent elections in Angola. Borges Namire joins us by Skype from Maputo. He is a research consultant at the Institute for Security Studies Africa. And Marisa Lourenço is an independent political analyst focusing on Angola, Mozambique and South Africa. By the way, she is not related to Angola's President Lourenço. She joins us by Skype from Johannesburg. A very warm welcome to each of you. I'd like to start with you, Marisa Lourenço. So as we've been saying, polling so far has showed that the MPLA is out ahead. We are waiting for the total vote count, the announcements. Do you think, though, that this is a done deal? The MPLA will retain power?
It seems to be, although, of course, UNITA has already indicated that it will challenge the electoral result once it is finalized, especially because it does look like the MPLA will come out with a 50+1 majority, which would allow it to retain its parliamentary majority and then very easily install incumbent President Lourenço for a second term. Since a third of the results were announced last night, the gap has closed between the MPLA and UNITA. So the MPLA has got about 52% at the moment, and UNITA is trailing with about 44%. It's close, but with the vote almost at the end of counting, it would mean that UNITA is unlikely to catch up to the MPLA to come out with the most votes on top at this point.
Okay, José Gama in Pretoria. As we heard there from Marisa, the opposition is disputing the results. How is that likely to play out? What's going to happen next?
Good afternoon. Thank you for having me. So in this election, there was 14 million people registered as a voter. But unfortunately, we don't know how many people really vote, because on the list of the electoral votes, there are like 2.5 million people who already died. But unfortunately, the Electoral Commission wouldn't accept to remove those dead people. So UNITA is doing like a parallel count. And according to what they announced, they say they are winning this election. But otherwise, yesterday, the Commission on Election announced that the MPLA was ahead with 60%. But today, they say that MPLA is now having like 52%. So what you look at this is like, during many years, Angolan was running by Eduardo dos Santos for many years. And after some time, people realized that the problem of Angolan was was from a single person, that was Eduardo dos Santos. So in 2017, Eduardo dos Santos stepped down and Lourenço came. So Lourenço, people were believing that the solution was there. So after some time, Lourenço was copying dos Santos, was doing almost the same as dos Santos. The life of the people didn't change that much. So now people believe that the problem is not the single person, it's not the leader of the ruling party, but the problems is the system itself, the problems is the MPLA itself. So that's why now people went to vote, went to cast, and decide to remove, to vote against MPLA. They're okay. Trying. So this kind of, this election was to penalize the ruling party.
Borges Namire, as we heard there, UNITA is doing a parallel count, but that's obviously apart from the National Electoral Commission. So if these two sides, if you want to call them that, are coming up with different results, what is going to happen? Could that lead to post-election violence?
Thank you. I think, yes, post-electoral violence is something that was already expected in Angola. First of all, because people, opposition and citizens, they don't trust an electoral body. So whatever result the National Electoral Commission would bring in terms of figures, people not trust in that. But also we can see that in Luanda, which is the capital of Angola, UNITA is winning. And Luanda is where we have the elite, we have the social network, we have the youth, we have people speaking loud. So it means we can foresee some kind of unrest following the final results.
Marisa Lourenço, what's the playing field being like in the lead up to these elections?
So there has been greater concern over transparency of vote counting, more so than in other election years. And that's because in November last year, Parliament, obviously led by the MPLA, passed a law that would centralize vote counting in Luanda. And this meant that instead of votes being counted provincially, they'd be counted centrally. And what that's done effectively, it's removed this layer of transparency from the vote count. And this has raised a lot of concern that because the National Electoral Commission and because the courts are partial to the MPLA, that there could be more widespread manipulation. I think what we've also seen in the lead up to this election over the past 12 months is we have seen the ruling party quite nervous of UNITA's growing popularity. UNITA has really modernized. It's moved away from its reputation as a party of war veterans. It resonates with the urban youth. And we saw the MPLA, for example, try to annul, direct the courts to annul the leadership of UNITA. It ultimately wasn't successful. You know, we've sort of seen it take various moves over the past 12 months, indicating that it is nervous and that it does realize it has declined in popularity over the past 5 years.
Okay. José Gama, even if the MPLA wins, it has won a much smaller percentage of the vote than previously. How has this election been different, in your opinion?
Comparing to the previous election, so in this election, the voters was the one who tried to control for themselves the election. So in this election, most of the people went to the police. They were the one who denounced that there was dead people on this. On the list of the voter, the people are the one who are monitorized, and the people is like now the people are the one who are supporting UNITA. The civil society. So what we expect in these elections, especially on these results, they're announcing the results, but it should be the results by municipality. And what they are doing, they just announced the votes from provincial. And this votes that they announced, there's no technical value. There's no technical value. You can calculate with you don't know where does it comes from. I think even though you can go to CNA web web page, you cannot control you cannot realize if these votes are really feeble or if there's a credibility on this. I think comparing to the previous election, now we as according to the result to the new outcome, we're going to have like a equilibrium in parliament, and that one will be good for democracy. So this is the one that Angolan really needs, a balance in terms of parliament.
Okay, Borges Namire, how has Lorenzo's presidency been?
Well, the first 5 years of President Lorenzo government was, I would say, frustrating to the majority of Angolans. I've been to Luanda for almost 2 months, conducting a field research there. So people are upset because of, internal reasons, but also in problems like a COVID pandemic. So the unemployment in Angola is so high. The poverty in Angola has increased. Prices of basic goods have been soaring a lot. And in south of Angola, we have a drought, which is killing people and livestock. So in summary, their life did not improve in Angola. Instead, one who returned to see how difficult was the life in 2017 when President João Lourenço started his term, and now people will find that, okay, it was better in 2017. So President João Lourenço, he did lead in a very difficult times globally, but also in Angola. The price of oil has been, reducing in Angola, and oil is the main export for Angola. So unfortunately, did not improve a lot. That's why President João Lourenço wants his second term to make it different. But this is not only in economic sector, but also in the political sector, democracy. The democracy in Angola, did not improve at all. Actually, Angola is rated as a non-free country in different international index. So the crackdown of civil rights, civil society, space is closing, independent media in Angola is not operating. So I think the performance of President João Lourenço was very, very, very low compared to what was the expectation of Angolans.
Okay, Marisa Lorenzo, would you agree with that assessment of President Lorenzo's time? And, I mean, has he been presiding over a non-free country?
I agree that he's been presiding over a non-free country. I mean, Angola is only a nominal democracy. But I do disagree that he hasn't marked a departure from his predecessor. I think that we are looking at an Angola that in some ways is very, very different to what it was before he came into office. I think his political and economic reform agenda has definitely been a mixed bag of success. I think it's been full of contradictions. But I don't think that we should say that he hasn't changed much or that he hasn't at least recorded some achievements. And I think really the main achievement of the Lorenzo administration has been tackling the debt load. There's a massive debt load in Angola. It reached over 120% of total GDP in 2020. And of course, it's had to manage this throughout global shocks like the COVID-19 pandemic and of course the Russia-Ukraine conflict. And this, of course, has not been easy at all. But what the Lorenzo administration did since coming into office in 2017, it really committed to fiscal prudence. It reined in wasteful expenditure. It predicated its budget on a worst-case scenario for the oil price. And it really showed commitment to not spend, to reining in superfluous spending, which was quite a big task because it didn't have much room to do that. And I think that commitment has been really good. Of course, though, as Borges has already pointed out, the actual standard of living hasn't improved for Angola. So while we sort of had this broad achievement on the top for the economy, it hasn't really trickled down. And, Angola is clearly one of the most unequal societies in the world. And I think that that's very clear to see. And that's something that hasn't improved. And then if we look at his political reforms, he did tackle some cases of corruption. But of course, there are still some murky figures in government that, have not really had to answer for corruption under the Dos Santos administration. And then I think one of the biggest disappointments for Lorenzo was the failure to uphold his promise to hold local elections in 2020. And this really came about because the MPLA understands that UNITA is much more popular in urban areas. But it also indicated that despite his promise to not be as repressive and to open the political space, he wasn't really going to follow through on that promise. So again, really a mixed bag of success for Lourenço.
Okay, José Gama, over in Pretoria, people under 30 make up more than two-thirds of Angola's population. Many of them obviously have no memory of the civil war. How does that shape what they want to see, what's important to them, and who they vote for?
So one of the things that we have to understand is that in this election, so there were new voters from age 18 to 24. 60% of these voters are youth. And in Angola, we do have, in terms of unemployment rate, it's 58%. So that means 58% of these voters are unemployment. And those are the ones who are contesting regularly the power of President João Lourenço. And probably those are the ones who vote against the MPLA. But the ruling party refuse to accept that these young people, I mean, when those young people come, go to the street and protest, the ruling party say to them that they are being instrumentalized by UNITA, and they become very, very, very angry with this, the way that the ruling party deal with them. So it's like they're new structure, new voters. That's they're people that they never. They're new. I mean, and they are not relating to those who came in from the guerrilla, who are familiarized with the war. And those ones, they are people. They are coming from university, and these are the potential ones who are protesting and contesting President João Lourenço. And we think that's in 2027. It's look like we are facing the declines of MPLA, and the challenges that João Lourenço will have and face on the following 5 years. It's going to be to accommodate those people. And President João Lourenço, the flags, they're using the flags for corruption. And during these 5 years, he fails at some point with corruption. Because the central point from corruption in Angola was the Sonangol, the oil state company. And during those 5 years, he never touched Sonangol. He never investigated Sonangol. There's no officials from Sonangol that are facing trial or penalized by corruption.
Okay. Borges Namire, UNITA has been accused of not making its strategies clear, other than being anti-MPLA. What's your take on that?
I think that is a very wrong accusation. We see that the UNITA candidate, Adalberto Costa Jr., he's bringing very fresh ideas. I can just mention some of them. For example, he said something which is very relevant for the context of Angola and the other African countries where we have the ruling part as the liberation movement. He said by the time he is elected the president of Angola, he will renounce as the leader of UNITA so that he can serve 100% to the government, to the state. That's very important, because if we look to Angola, for example, now, we want to understand the difference between MPLA and the state, the Angolan state. Actually, the one who is leading MPLA is at the same time leading the state and making all that confusion. That creates a kind of a citizen of prime class and second class citizen. Bank those from the prime class, the one who are members of MPLA. So that's just one example of the clear proposal from UNITA candidate. But that's just an accusation. UNITA brought new ideas, fresh ideas. That's why they have improved a lot in terms of followers. That's why we saw, very massive support to UNITA. Actually, I think Angola never had a so charismatic leader like Adalberto Costa Jr.
Marisa Lourenço, all of you have expressed concerns about the transparency of the elections, the freeness, the fairness of these elections. If that is the case, if these elections were not free and fair, has there been any improvement that you see in terms of the health of the country's democracy, the health of the country's political life?
Not particularly. So I think at the beginning of Lourenço's term in 2017, and also in part of 2018, he invited civil society activists, some of whom had actually been imprisoned under the administration led by Dos Santos. And, you know, he extended a hand to them. He promised to make the media landscape much more fair. But from around 2019, he went back on those promises. So there was quite a lot of hope that it would become a much easier, much more critical kind of political environment. But from 2019, we saw the MPLA kind of up to the same old tactics, you know. And then, of course, because the police are partial to the MPLA, anytime you see any kind of demonstration or any protest that is anti-government and because of the MPLA's dominance, by extension, anti-MPLA, you see a very harsh crackdown on this. There's very little breathing space. And then I think if we look at this election period specifically, we've seen state-owned media really give biased reporting towards the MPLA. So you've got the main TV news channel, TPA. It basically just ran stories about the ruling party, about Lorenzo. If we look at some of the state-owned newspapers as well, they made sure that all of the main stories were about the president for consecutive days. So we haven't really seen much of an improvement, although there was optimism at the beginning that this would be a little bit different and a little bit better.
José Gama, how difficult is life right now for ordinary Angolans in terms of the cost of living, the ability to access basic necessities?
Well, I think what happened in Angola now, like we have like 28 million of people, and the poverty, the level of poverty are very, very, very high, and it's one of the failure of President João Lourenço. So actually what happened when President João Lourenço came to the power, there was like a very big expectation. So President was trying to move Angolan to a very, very good standard. But after some time, 2 years, President realized that, I think he made a choice between saving the Angola and saving the ruling party, MPLA. So he decided to save MPLA. Let's say for the first time, he was trying to promote some like more space of debate. But after 2 years, he monopolized the media. So all the medias now were controlled by the ruling parts. As I say, the president chose between saving the country and saving the MPLA. So he decided to be on the right side of MPLA. That's why he's in a kind of isolated man. And you could see also in this election. So the last when he was doing his rally, so he was concentrating attacking Roberto. He's also blaming the COVID pandemic, saying that the COVID pandemic is the one that's impeding to not deliver everything that he did the promise during the mm-hmm. his last term.
I'm sorry, I have to interrupt you there. We've come almost to the end of the show. We've got about a minute left. Marisa Lorenzo, I'd like to end with you. Assuming the MPLA does get into power, in 1 minute, can you give us how it plans to improve people's lives, to diversify the economy, to make, I guess, the cost of living more palatable for people?
To be honest, I don't know if it does have a specific plan to do that, but I think what we can expect over the next 5 years is the government to continue with its economic reform agenda. I don't expect that it will reverse any of the gains that it has made, that it will start to spend wildly again. I think it will remain quite conservative. I think one of the biggest challenges that it is going to face is that it needs to hold local elections. It needs to show that it's moving into a more democratic space. I'm not sure how that will play out, because it would more likely favor UNITA than the MPLA. And that's a balancing act that Lorenzo needs to take charge of. He also needs to, there are some internal divisions within the MPLA, some people that have not liked Lorenzo's changes. Mm-hmm. He's also got to manage those. So I think he's really got his hands full, and it's going to be an interesting 5 years to see how people respond.
All right. Thank you very much for that. Thank you to all of our guests, José Gama, Borges Namire and Marisa Lorenzo. And thank you too for watching. You can see the program again anytime by visiting our website, aljazeera.com. And for further discussion, go to our Facebook page. That's facebook.com/AJInsideStory. You can also join the conversation over on Twitter. Our handle is @AJInsideStory. From me, Kim Vanell, and the whole team here, bye-bye for now.